This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending the 24th of March, 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 23rd of March 2023. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
Jane Rutter.
Hello.
Those are our regular readers, and as a guest reader in the studio today we have a young fellow called Jude Richards.
Hello.
And what is it you do at the Chronicle, Jude?
I study sports journalism at university, and I've just been writing a few pieces, really.
Excellent. Yeah. Good. Thank you very much. We look forward to hearing you read things. So we start with the headline stories today, which are Joy as Scheme is Finally Underway, Probe into MP Lobbying Claim, and Pavilion Plans are Revitalised. So starting with the first headline story, please.
Tony. Joy as Scheme is Finally...
Wait, hang on.
Joy as Scheme is Finally Underway. Excitement is building after the new development partner for one of the biggest schemes in Winchester's history met local residents for the first time. The Jigsaw Consortium was announced as the developer of Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, formerly called Silver Hill, on March the 20th. The group, trading as Partnerships and Places, is made up of Generate Kajima Regeneration Limited, Kajima and Regeneration Development, and PFP Igloo, PFP Capital and Igloo Regeneration. Residents had a chance to hear from and question the new developer at a meeting at the Nutshell Theatre in King's Walk on March the 21st. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, opened the meeting and said, "This is a very exciting day. We live and work in a very special place, but part of the central area is not quite as special. This is our chance to transform the area. This will be a mixed-use regeneration of the area. Our chosen partner gets what we want." John Norden, Jigsaw Creative Director, gave a presentation to explain the approach they were taking with CWR. Mr. Norden said that the CWR was unique. He said, "This is a fantastic opportunity to take things slowly. Measure twice, cut once." Members of public were positive about the new development partner and the team. Former councillor Patrick Davies asked if there would be any large retailers included and said that it should be distinct from the high street. Councillor Todd said, "The supplementary planning document stops us from going with large retail. This is not how we're going about it." Joe Crocker, Executive Director of Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis, said, "This makes me really excited about the project. Thank you for taking the climate crisis seriously in your presentation." Former City Councillor Eleanor Bell said, "This is no reason why renting a house shouldn't be an aspiration in people's lives. There are many quality places to rent, but the rental market is broken. Good luck." Neil Wyatt from the South Downs Social in King's Walk said, "It's great to see this happening after a lot of talk. Rents are very high on the high street. I don't think we would have been able to stay in business if we were there. I hope this will create opportunities for young people in Winchester."
Responding in the national interest to an urgent public call from ministers and the NHS in a national crisis, even if ultimately it led... The headline, Probe into MP Lobbying Claim. Winchester MP Steve Bryan is being investigated by Parliament's Standard Commissioner over paid advocacy and declaration of an interest. Mr. Bryan, current chairman of the Commons Heath Committee, is under investigation by Parliamentary Commissioner for Standards, Daniel Greenberg. It comes following claims that Mr. Bryan lobbied the head of the NHS on behalf of a firm for which he was working as a paid consultant. Mr. Bryan, a former health minister, complained that he had been trying for months to persuade the NHS to hire anaesthetists through the recruitment company Remedium, according to the Daily Telegraph. The details were revealed in the tranche of elite WhatsApp messages from former Health Secretary Matt Hancock, published by the paper, prompting calls for Mr. Bryan to stand aside from his committee role. According to the Telegraph, Mr. Bryan contacted Michael Gove, the then Cabinet Officer Minister, in early 2021, in the midst of a pandemic, seeking his help after he had tried to raise the issue with NHS England Chief Executive Simon, now Lord Stevens. In a message to Mr. Gove, he wrote, "Dear Michael, sorry to raise this, but having tried the depth of health, seemed logical, and the chief exec of the NHSE, ditto, I am now at loss. Long story short, I have been trying for months to help the NHS through a company I've connected with called Remedium. They have 50 anaesthetists right now who can be in the country and on the ground in the NHS if someone only said let us help. They just want to assist and ask me how they might. Despite offering this to Health and to Simon Stevens, I've had nothing despite SS telling the press conference last week this is an acute problem. Despite the PM telling the liaison committee this is the biggest problem, etc, etc. How might I progress this, or does the NHS just not need the help?" On February the 2nd, Mr. Gove forwarded the message to Mr. Hancock, who replied, "Weird, he hasn't texted me." He added a short time later, "This is already in hand. Thanks for pinging on." According to the Telegraph, Remedium has been paying Mr. Bryan £1,600 for 8 hours work each month since July 2020, an arrangement that continued until the end of December 2021. Under Parliament's rules, MPs are not allowed to lobby for any organisation they are being paid for 6 months after their remuneration. Mr. Bryan told the Telegraph this was about responding in the national interest to an urgent public call from ministers and the NHS in a national crisis, even if, ultimately, it led nowhere, let alone secure any business for Remedium. Mr. Bryan has been contacted for the comment. Daisy Cooper, Deputy Lib Dem leader and spokesperson on health and social care, tweeted on Friday, "Steve Bryan should immediately step down from the Health Select Committee whilst this investigation takes place. It is absurd for an MP who may have wrongly lobbied the NHS now be in charge of holding them to account."
Thank you, Jude. And now we have the third headline story, read by Jane.
Pavilion plans are revitalised. Plans for a pavilion in North Walls Recreation Ground in Winchester have been revitalised after the costs for the previous design soared. Planning consent has now been granted for the new scheme, with designs by Stride Treglowne, the same firm of architects that designed the leisure centre at Bar End and the new pavilion at King George V playing fields. Winchester City Council commissioned the new design at the end of 2021 to simplify the original AR Design Studio scheme and bring costs within its budget, supplemented by the donations from many other organisations and individuals. A quantity surveyor report has recently been commissioned to determine what the revised costs will be. The costs from the previous plans increased from £800,000 to more than £1 million due to inflation.
Thank you, and we move on now to the death notices. They will be followed by Christian comment, letters to the editor. So first, the death announcements. Brockway Peter Brockway, at home on the 1st of March, aged 51. Dromard Sheila Jill Dromard, on the 11th of March at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice in Andover, aged 76. Gail Brian Arthur Gale, aged 84, on the 11th of March. Lewin, Ivor George Lewin, on the 27th of February, aged 82. Morley, Mary Louise Morley, on the 5th of March, aged 89. Wren, Patricia Ann Jane Wren, née Cooper, on the 23rd of February, aged 91. Christian comment is going to be read by Tony.
Right, and this Christian comment is from the Reverend Philip Crinks, and is headed, Passion, Love and Suffering. What is your passions? If I asked you, you would list the people, causes and activities for which you feel the most energy and enthusiasm. Those things you love most. Our passions are our lives, and we view them positively. To predecessor generations of English speakers, this would have made no sense. For them, passions were sufferings, and especially strong feelings you were not in control of. The answer to what are your passions was whatever feelings you happened to be gripped by at the time. This included negative feelings, like fear, anger and vengefulness. Because passions were sufferings, they called the suffering and death of Jesus his passion. So today we call a reading or acting of those events a passion reading or passion play. How did passion as suffering come to mean passion as love? The answer is that our predecessors saw love as partly a form of suffering. They put love in the same category as other strong feelings, like fear and anger. They looked at love realistically. They were prepared to acknowledge the complexity, pain, and suffering of love. This link between love and suffering is a deep one. If you feel passion for someone, you will be prepared to make sacrifices for them. The suffering and death of Jesus is the ultimate expression of this. God has so loved the world that he has sent a teacher, a reconciler like no other. God himself, physically present and humanly vulnerable. To this, the world says its loudest possible no. Jesus goes to Jerusalem, is hailed as Messiah King, but within days is put through agonizing suffering and killed. This is our story. God comes to find us, but what he asks of us, to open our hearts to him, to be honest about our shortcomings, to accept a new life of peace and justice and joy, this feels too much for us. So a part of us says a loud no, and even joins with the crowd in shouting, "Crucify him!" What makes God's passion unique is that Jesus responds to his sufferings of love with just more love. He does not take revenge on those who kill him. Instead, he transformationally forgives them. By doing this, he reveals God's radical culture of grace and forgiveness. Jesus shows what W.H. Vanstone calls love's endeavor, love's expense. Drained is love of making full, bound in setting others free, poor in making many rich, weak in giving power to be. Jesus inspires a movement of followers which will endure to the end of time as we continue his costly teaching and reconciling work. God's passion for you expresses the depth of the link between love and suffering. However loud your no, the passion story is a bigger yes. Even killing Jesus will not ever be enough to drown out God's love. This is the passion which makes sense of all passions. Many waters cannot quench this love, neither can the floods drown it. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And this was from the Reverend Philip Cripps.
We're moving on now to the letters. To the editor, if you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836. I'll read that again. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And so we'll start with the first letter, please, Tony.
Right, and this is from Don West, and it's headed Red Tape to Blame for Shortage. Elaine Ehrenfield is quite right to encourage us to adapt our diet to the season and grow our own vegetables. However, her analysis of the reason for the current shortage of salad is incomplete. Yes, there are adverse weather conditions where the crops are grown, but that does not explain why the UK has shortages, yet mainland Europe has none. The only material difference is that to get their goods to the UK, suppliers now have to go through the rigmarole of customs declaration bureaucracy, additional cost and border delays of sending their goods outside the single market and customs union. This ties up trucks and drivers, reduces their profit margins, and strains cash flow. When suppliers are short and suppliers have to make a choice, the alternative of supplying customers in the European Union with minimal delay, bureaucracy, and cost is always going to be more attractive. Taking back control has clearly backfired when it comes to the very basics of having a secure food supply. And this was from Don West, Woodfield Drive, Winchester.
This letter is from Roger Stevens, and it is titled The Long and Winding Andover Road. So, it seems that Miss Biddle's letter, Chronicle, March the 2nd, that the new residents of King's Barton are largely unaware that at the caprice of Winchester City Council, a main road is to be diverted through their estate. Possibly some have been told, but dismissed the story as being too crackers to believe. Not everyone keeps up with our national politics. Of course, it begs the question of why the road hasn't already been diverted, if our council thinks it is such a wonderful idea. I foresee a national scandal. The residents of King's Barton will get together and sue our council for recompense to cover the fall in the value of their homes. No doubt the developer is aware of this likely outcome and has taken steps to ensure that the liability falls entirely on the council. An invariable outcome of the Great British Scandal is that only the innocent suffer, that's you and me and dear reader. There will be a very expensive trial with associated junkets and a very large penalty with costs imposed on our council by the court. Possibly. Certain denizens of the council offices may suffer the very lightest rap on the knuckles, but the whole cost will fall on us via our council tax payments, and there's nothing we can do about it. Letters editor's note. The Hampshire County Council is the highways authority, not the city council. The diversion was agreed when planning permission was granted more than 10 years ago. And that letter is from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
Homelessness is a big issue, and this is a letter from Peter Cook. After being homeless myself in the past, I can't understand why Winchester City Council can't pull their finger out and finally, after so many years, do something positive regarding homelessness. How about taking over our old leisure centre and finally spend some money on the homeless and convert the massive building into separate rooms, etc.? No, let's just sell off our green sites to companies to build overpriced housing and watch the money come rolling in. Will homelessness in Winchester be sorted? No, not with the way our council works and always has been, but we've got to think about the problem. And that letter was from Peter Cook, Firmstone Road in Winchester.
And this is a letter from Patrick Davis, and it's entitled, Public Has a Right to Know. The Chronicle, March the 9th, reported complaints by one city councillor about the delay taken in dealing with code of conduct complaints against himself and other councillors. Surely the Winchester public are now entitled to know the nature of these complaints, their seriousness, and all the individual councillors involved. Can it be a coincidence that the Liberal Democrat Mayor of Winchester, elected with enthusiasm by his fellow councillors last May, stopped attending council meetings and functions last October, and finally resigned as mayor last month? For now, he remains a Liberal Democrat councillor, but by law will cease to be a councillor in the first week in April, as he will then have failed to attend any meetings for 6 months. The council makes generous provisions for expenses to be paid to councillors, including a serving mayor. Why has the council failed to give any explanation for this extraordinary state of affairs? Can it be a further coincidence that in 11 city council seats, which the Liberal Democrats are due to defend in May, 8 of their present city councillors appear to be standing down? Isn't there something seriously amiss in the city council's current regime? And this letter is from Patrick Davis, Belgarham Place, Staple Gardens, Winchester.
This letter is from Simon Lever and is entitled "Murderer Should Be Jailed for Life." A murderer may be freed by the parole board following exhaustive analysis that he is not considered a danger, Chronicle, March the 16th. When a judge delivers life sentence, it is typically 16 years with potential parole reducing the sentence. Families who have suffered the loss of murdered loved one will suffer for life. Michael Gifford Hall should be incarcerated in prison for life as punishment and serves as a potential deterrent. This letter was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter is entitled WhatsApp Messages and it's from Charles Tallack. Matt Hancock's leaked WhatsApp messages have provided shocking revelations about the thinking and behaviours of ministers and their political advisers during the early stages of the pandemic. The latest batch of messages from February 2021 shine a spotlight on the behaviour of Winchester MP Steve Brine. We already know that at the time of the messages, he was working for Remedium Partners, an agency that recruits staff into the NHS. For this, he was paid £1,600 a month for 8 hours' work. But what made Mr. Brine so valuable that he was paid £200 an hour, 10 times the median wage of his constituents? The leaked messages provide a clue. They suggest he may have been lobbying government on behalf of Remedium. He asked the Department of Health and the head of the NHS to take up Remedium services, and when they didn't respond, he asked Michael Gove to intervene. Lobbying by MPs for companies that are paying them is banned. Mr. Brine's statement that ultimately it led nowhere, let alone secured any business for Remedium, entirely misses the point. And that was from Charles Tallack in Berwick Avenue, Week in Winchester.
And this letter is from Ken Searle, and it's entitled, "Recycling is not good enough." It is a priority to recycle these days. I have a small recycling bin I would like to replace with a larger one, but you have to purchase a replacement at £34. As a householder that uses quite a lot of glass bottles, the rather small collection box is normally full. At the start of the bottle collection service, I would put out an extra box, and it would be collected. No more. They leave a note saying they won't empty it, only the black box. We requested a second black box. The council won't supply one. So we're not going to pay for an extra bin. We already pay rates for this service, and are going to have to put excess recycling and glass in the rubbish bin. We did, however, purchase a garden waste bin. These should be free, but still have not received the new bin after 4 weeks. Very poor service for so much for recycling. And that's from Kensal, Hilltop, Littleton, Winchester.
This letter is from Peter Rees and is entitled, Why Should We Cleanse Books? Khaled Aziz strikes a very topical chord, and I totally agree with his conclusion. What is this fantasism about cleansing books of words that are not PC, in vogue, or that might cause offence or distress? Who are the woke guardians of language intent on sanitising our reading material, supposedly safeguarding young readers? During a time of this seriously right-wing government, the politically correct language zealots are turning their fire on books. We await the same with television, video games and all other diverse language media. Perhaps we are soon to see labels on books. Be warned, this book contains words that might cause harm or distress. Have we gone completely mad? Writers should never be constrained by a catalogue of words they should not use. Writing is sometimes difficult enough without the Parisian print police getting to work.
Absolutely.
Children should be encouraged to read early, often, and as much as they can. It's the role of adults to answer any questions or to discuss content with children. In this way, talking brings about clarification, explanation, understanding, and a love of literature. It also explains why some words might be challenged. The most important thing is to motivate and encourage children to read, and to be discerning readers for the rest of their lives. Reading books matters. We do not want the fantacle to prescribe reading because there are some challenging words. We do not want our freedom and right to choose our reading material prevented by anyone. Woke in this context is not useful at all, just another crazy fashion that I hope dies soon. And that letter was from Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
This letter from Dr. Les Burwood is entitled Overflow Parking in Small Road. One small road, very near the university, has over the past 10 years become a de facto overflow car park for the university, despite repeated requests for the City Council by residents to bring in double yellow lines, thus banning all those who don't live there from parking and disrupting the lives of those who do live there. This recurring theme has often been a news item in the Hampshire Chronicle. Today I watched as the refuse truck, a Sainsbury's van and a white delivery van were unable to access a large chunk of the short close because of parked cars left by students. The council has recently put up a notice, a traffic regulation order proposal. This proposes that only a small part of the close should have no waiting. However welcome as that is, it is totally inadequate in dealing with problems of access to all of the seven houses in the road and the very safety of their residents. All users of the road are endangered by cars parking on a blind bend, on a hill, on a carriageway not wide enough for refuse trucks and other important vehicles without their driving on the pavement. Also, without a total ban on parking, residents will continue to suffer other safety issues and disruptions such as noise and pollution from students coming and going at all times of the day and night, as well as blocking access to their own front drives. We urge the council to extend the present limited proposal to cover the whole of the small close and ban parking there once and for all. It is unacceptable that residents are still unable to live in peace and safety in and near their own homes because of others from the university who continue to disrupt their lives. Please extend the proposal now. And that's from Dr. Les Burwood, Sleepers Dell Gardens in Winchester.
First person this week is going to be read by Tony.
Right, and it's by Joanna Lewis, and it's headed Music Matters. How fantastic to see local students taking on a musical marathon, as featured in last week's Chronicle. 65 pupils from Winchester College raised funds for earthquake victims in Turkey and Syria, offering free classical and organ music concerts over a 24-hour period. Cello, violin, French horn, trombone and grand piano players were amongst the stars. It took me right back to my big school concert, the thrill of performance, the feeling of having total mastery of the music, the admiring glances. I was just 11. My instrument was, of course, the recorder. I don't like the label child progeny, but it put it like this. I can still hear Frère Jacques ringing in my ears. Further signs of advanced musical dexterity soon followed. I was an absolute demon, working the red button on the cassette player to record the top 10 hits of the week so that the DJ's voice didn't ruin the intros. Second violin, third row, was not for me. And that was the end of my musical career. Thank goodness we were a musical family in other ways. I had parents who loved music, from playing records, taking us to concerts, or singing hymns and shanties round the piano in my grandparents' front room. My mother loved classical music. At weekends, while cooking or cleaning, she would play big, emotional, dramatic symphonies and concertos, Beethoven, Sibelius, Rachmaninoff, and Tchaikovsky. Back then, it probably made me escape to my bedroom using homework as an excuse. But exposure to a range of musical genres when you're young plants seeds that can blossom later. I will never understand opera, and will likely never appreciate the beauty in people shouting at each other in a foreign language before jumping off a cliff. It's a failing, I admit. But early polyphony and medieval and Renaissance music have become for me the most sublime. The most sublime examples of what humanity can compose for voice and instrumental that take us to a higher place. At different stages in life, perhaps we need different kinds of music to help us compartmentalize stress or find distance and comfort from difficult times and sadness. Personally, I think classical music creates more potential pathways into other soundscapes for this. Nevertheless, being unable to play an instrument is a regret. Having a great music teacher and someone who can help find the right instrument for you or nurture your voice, even when you're flatter than an ironing board, is such a gift. I hope all our local schools have that. We didn't in our state school, but at least now charities exist, like Music for the Many or the Amber Trust. One of our unsung great British traditions is the heroic music teacher who sticks with the gifted, or not so gifted, with the patience of a saint. Many give free tuition, going above and beyond, always putting young people first. I wish I could go back and say sorry to my violin teacher. We lost touch after he took early retirement. So why on earth, then, is the BBC intent on abolishing the BBC singers? They regularly give concerts for free, as well as free singing lessons in schools and other educational institutions. Established in 1924, they go back to the origins of the BBC. They are the only full-time professional choir in the UK, as the online petition will tell you. Made up of just 20 singers, what they cost in salaries is less than the cost of Gary Lineker. Why should he get paid so much for essentially hanging out with a bunch of old cronies, offering football commentary that's not as funny as listening to the three blokes down the pub? And Lineker also makes a fortune from his private media company. Out of tune with the concept of providing a public service by axing its precious choir, the Beeb is hitting all the wrong notes.
Oh. Jane, please read us the Hampshire editorial comment.
And this is entitled Positivity Around New Developer. The new developer for Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, has finally been announced. After months of work, it was clear to see the relief and excitement of everyone involved as the Jigsaw Consortium was revealed as the development partner. Given the long and checkered history of the scheme, previously known as Silver Hill, it would have been perhaps expected for the developers to be given a grilling by the public at the question and answer session on Tuesday evening. However, everyone was overwhelmingly positive about the new team. Previous opponents to the scheme were prepared to listen to the impressive credentials and the wealth of experience the consortium brings. All they need now is a scheme. This is a unique opportunity for the city to leave a legacy for the next generation. It's widely known how expensive it is for people to live in Winchester, which is why it's not surprising that so many young people move away. This is the chance to create a mixed-use area, which includes houses at a reasonable price, to encourage young people to stay in the city. The people of Winchester seem to be very positive about the developer and the future scheme. Long may it continue.
No special announcements this week, just a reminder that British summertime starts this weekend, and the clocks go forward by 1 hour on Saturday night or Sunday morning, depending on how you look at it. So on Sunday, sunrise will be 7 a.m. and sunset 7:30 p.m. Nice to have some of these longer days, isn't it?
Absolutely.
If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. I'll read that again. 01962 861 229, and that number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
This is one entitled Village 10K Race and Fate to Return for the Second Year. Compton School Association has announced that the Compton 10K and Fate will return on Sunday, May the 21st. The 2023 event will follow the same format as last year's inaugural event. It will start at 10:30 a.m. and will wind its way along a scenic route, taking in views across Compton Down and the countryside of southern Winchester. The run will be chip-timed, and there will be wooden medals for all finishers. The event is family-friendly, and the hope is that runners will bring people along to support them and enjoy all the fun of the fete, which will take place in the school grounds on the same day. There will be plenty of games and activities, a bouncy castle, licensed bar, barbecue and entertainment, including local musicians and dance groups. Compton All Saints Primary School head teacher David Ware said the Compton 10K was a fantastic event in 2022 that helped bring the whole community together. There was a real buzz about our summer fete, which provided the perfect place for the runners to go after finishing. With school budgets becoming ever tighter, events like these go a long way to help provide our children with the resources they need to access the curriculum. Last year's race raised over £10,000, which, among other things, has helped improve our computing resources by enabling us to purchase a new set of school iPads and also new sports equipment for PE lessons. We're hoping that we can use funds raised from this event to help improve our outside play areas. I want to say a big thank you to everyone who took part, and I hope to see you at the start of this year too. Local businesses have lent their support through sponsorship and equipment. Sponsors confirmed so far for the event are Alexandra Sports, Rees Leisure, Charters Estate Agents, Rathbones, Physiotherapy and Wellness, Holloway Health and Fitness, and Fit State. The fete can be enjoyed from 11 a.m. and will continue until 3 p.m. And there's a very jolly picture of five young people leaping in the air under the finishing arch.
This one is entitled Mental Health Pioneers New Wellbeing Initiative. A mental health professional has launched her own service to bring down waiting times and make help more affordable. Neve Penman from Oliver's Battery has received hundreds of inquiries since she advertised her service, Let It Out, with the first workshop taking place on Tuesday, March the 7th. Operating from Week Community Centre and the United Church in Jewry Street. Neve is offering 8-week wellbeing workshops for people in groups of up to 10 people. The programme, made up of 2-hour sessions, is structured around developing self-confidence and discovery. Leaving 7 years of working at the Trinity Centre behind, the 43-year-old therapist is hoping to increase the accessibility of mental health help, with the long-term aim of encouraging other organisations to help find free spaces on the courses. Neve said the demand has been shocking, and I keep thinking, why hasn't someone introduced this already? Mental health is my life's passion, and it has always been a dream to do it without the constrictions of an employer. What I'm offering is different to anything else in Winchester. People don't like the words counselling or therapy, so I want to make the space as comfortable and familiar as possible. Counselling seems to be going online now, which is not a way to live. People need to be around others with similar experiences and struggles, and then friendships often grow too. I completely understand what it can be scary to sit and be vulnerable with a group of strangers, but I'm here to assure people the best I can. She added, from the first session, I was overwhelmed with the stuff the group shared and the struggles they had. I feel very privileged that I can actually help and hope I can improve their lives. According to Neve, one-to-one counselling sessions typically cost between £55 to £90 an hour, while letter-out costs £160 for 16 hours. The service leader is urging organisations to come forward to further increase affordability by funding free or discounted places for those who can't afford it. The workshops use a mixture of PowerPoints, videos, therapy, and roleplay throughout the sessions, with new 8-week courses starting in May. Neve said, the biggest problem I'm facing is people can't afford to help, so we're trying to be as low cost and we can as we can, but we still need to pay for our venues. I'm happy to run as many sessions as I can within my capabilities.
New bid to ease the housing crisis. Civic chiefs in Winchester have given approval for a new company that will help address local housing need. City Council cabinet bosses have voted in favour of establishing a housing company called Venta Living to supply cheap homes for residents for years to come. Council documents state that the purpose of the housing company is to provide high-quality, energy-efficient homes to households who struggle to rent privately. The company aims to lease 41 flats currently being developed by the council in Winnell and to be managed by Venta Living. Winchester City Council is committed to retaining council houses under its control, with the target of building 1,000 by 2031. Speaking to Cabinet members, Councillor Kelsey Lerney said, I think this has been a long time coming, but I think it's been worth taking the time to get this right. I think this is important in meeting our pledges for homes for all, while the traditional council housing offer is very important to us. It's quite clear that there's a segment of society that we really haven't been serving well in this area, particularly down to the affordability issues. Moving forward with the housing company allows us to fulfil some of the pledges we made to people in Winnell when we came forward with the new flat proposal. I think this is very welcome and I'm very keen to support it. Councillor Jackie Porter added, long term, this has the real potential to make really great differences for families, so I'm really pleased that we're making the effort today to set up the infrastructure so we're ready to take on the first 41 properties, that there's every hope that this will grow. When it does grow, I think this will make a real difference for people in Winchester, and it will also enable younger families to stay here. The initiative has cross-party support, as the first steps to setting up the company were taken when the council was Conservative-controlled.
This is entitled Farewell from Team at City Centre Cafe. The owners of an independent Winchester cafe, Rawberry, have announced that they will be closing their doors for good. The cafe, whose vegetarian menu and fresh juices have set them apart during their time in Winchester, had humble beginnings as a juice stall in 2014 before opening as a pop-up bar in the Brook Centre. They found a permanent home in St George's Street in 2016, and it was very much a family affair. Husband and wife, Warren and Cheryl Scar, got their children involved as they set out to be a fresh, healthier alternative for the people of Winchester. The company allowed artists to use their space to display their work. Having an entirely vegetarian menu and being able to adapt to most dietary requirements. Warren and Cheryl explained that they've decided it's the right time for them to finish their journey with Rawberry, and they said that although it's bittersweet, it is something they wanted to do on their own terms. Warren said, "We're very proud of what we've achieved. We've had some fabulous customers over the years." Many loyal customers displayed sadness at the news. Local student Beck Minter, 22, said, "I'm really sad to hear that Rawberry are closing. The staff are always so welcoming, and the food is amazing. I will really miss their super smoothies." A new cafe, whose identity has not been revealed, is set to move into the space, with what the Rawberry team say will be a very different offering.
This one is entitled "Major Solar Farm Wins Backing from Planners." Plans for Major Solar Farm in the Hampshire countryside have been approved by civic chiefs. The facility, which will have an estimated 53,333 panels, will be at Locks Farm, Botley Road, near Bishop's Waltham. The scheme was approved by Winchester City's Council's Planning Committee on March the 15th. The committee heard it is estimated that the farm will provide renewable energy to power 5,500 homes for one year. The solar farm will be in operation for 40 years, after which the land will be cleared and returned to agricultural use. Nearby resident Emma Rosling urged the committee to vote against it. She said, "Some solar farms actually contribute to the carbon burden of the planet. It will be very visible to surrounding properties and passers-by. We can't understand why applicant didn't engage with neighbours of the site. We feel that the benefits do not outweigh the harm this will cause." Shedfield Parish Council was also opposed. Vice Chairman David Ogden said, "It has to be in the right place. This site has very good views. The need for renewable energy does not necessarily override environmental protection." Bishop's Waltham Parish Council originally objected to the proposal, but after a developer's consultation, it decided to support it. James Jamieson from developer Intelligence Alternatives said, "It's a suitable site for a solar farm. We have a strong support from officers and consultees. There will be substantial biodiversity benefits." Mr. Jamieson was questioned after the consultation with nearby residents. He said, "We approached residents directly and it was clear there were differences in opinion. This is actually the smallest project we are working on at the moment. We worked with the parish council and amended the scheme. I don't think it will be fair to say there was no engagement. The majority of councillors were satisfied with the application, despite the concerns raised." Councillor Jane Rutter said the scheme has had careful scrutiny. It will increase biodiversity and will be well screened. "I don't think the impact is enough for us to turn this down. I'm aware and sympathetic to the neighbours, but I believe you will get used to the solar panels." However, Councillor Horrell voted against the scheme. She said, "We're all in favour of solar farms. This is a balancing act. It was shocking to hear about the lack of interaction with the local properties. It showed a level of arrogance. The support for this came from people who won't be directly impacted. I'm disappointed there isn't a better resolution for the residents."
Electric bus on 4-week trial in city. An all-new electric bus is out and about in Winchester. The single-deck vehicle is being trialled by the City Council in partnership with Stagecoach. The prototype vehicle, manufactured by Volvo, will be used for 4 weeks on park and ride surfaces and evaluated for performance, comfort and effectiveness. Charged by portable charger at the depot, The bus also employs regenerative braking to capture the kinetic energy that is generated while the vehicle decelerates or comes to a standstill. Each seat of the automatic vehicle has an inbuilt charger for mobile phones. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for the Climate Emergency, said, "It's vital to reduce emissions of CO2 and tackle the great challenge of decarbonising the Winchester district as part of the wider issue of addressing climate change. Electric vehicles not only produce less carbon, but are cleaner and quieter, improving the air quality and experience of being in city centres. This bus trial provides an exciting opportunity to assess the potential of electric vehicles for the park and ride service and how they can contribute to our top priority to become greener, faster, ahead of a renewal of our vehicle contract in April 2024. James O'Neill, Commercial Director for Stagecoach South, said, "It's great to be working in partnership with Winchester City Council on the electric bus trial. The City Council share our vision for driving net zero, and we're thrilled to be embarking on this project to make Winchester a greener place to live and work."
Zoo experts' extinct fears. A Marwell Zoo conservationist has contributed to a groundbreaking study about species that have been declared extinct in the wild. The paper, which explores the potential to bring animals and plants back from the brink of extinction with the help of zoos, aquariums, botanical gardens and seed banks, was published in the academic journal Science on February the 24th. Studying 95 species of animals and plants that have only been seen in zoos and botanical institutions since 1950, the paper examines the potential for returning them to the wild. Examples of this having been achieved successfully include the scimitar-horned oryx, which Marwell was instrumental in reintroducing to North Africa, as well as donating animals to a trial reintroduction project in Bou Hedma National Park, Tunisia, in the mid-1980s, Marwell has been involved in three subsequent reintroductions. Dr. Tanya Gilbert, Marwell wildlife conservation biologist, said, "Conservation zoos are engaged in concerted efforts to save and restore extinct in the wild species. Our continued efforts to save species can lead to incredible results, but we need political and financial support to achieve this. Of the 95 species extinct in the wild, 38 are animal species, four of which can be found at Marwell. They are Partula moriana, Partula rosea, Partula varia, and the scimitar-horned oryx. Marwell Wildlife is also working with 13 additional species which are critically endangered with declining wild populations."
This one is entitled "More Rough Sleeping." The number of people sleeping rough across Hampshire last year rose, according to recently released figures published by the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities. The figures are a snapshot of rough sleeping on a single night between October the 1st and November the 30th, 2022. Winchester saw an increase in its rough sleeping population, with four rough sleepers recorded in 2022 compared to three in 2021. Councillor David Renard, housing spokesman for the Local Government Association, said, "With evictions in the private rented sector continuing to rise, it is crucial that the government urgently implements renters' reform legislation to put a stop to no-fault evictions. The building of affordable homes must be prioritised, and councils should be given the powers and resources to build 100,000 social homes a year to address the national shortage of affordable housing."
Play area opens soon. Work to make a Winchester playground more inclusive has nearly finished, with the park expected to open at the end of the month. Abbey Gardens play area was closed in September. 6 months on, the plan, which includes ideas from public feedback, is several weeks away from completion. A new accessible roundabout has been installed, and an inclusive swing is undergoing testing to be added after the playground opens. The revamp also includes a slide and a replacement of the popular train, while paths have been laid to improve accessibility across the park. Councillor Kathleen Becker said, "I know how well used and loved this play area is in Abbey Gardens. I'm very pleased that it'll be reopening soon, and especially in time for the Easter holidays. I'm particularly pleased that we're incorporating a mix of inclusive play equipment so the park can be enjoyed by a wide range of users. Access to good quality open play is so important for children's well-being and an important attraction in our city. We're proud to have the park and hope that children from across the district will enjoy many happy hours playing in it. Contractors are making the finishing touches before the play area along the Broadway opens at the end of March."
Upgrade for council lets. Winchester City Council is reducing the carbon emissions and running costs of four vacant council homes before they are re-let. The properties in Droxford and South Wanston are getting energy-saving upgrades, including internal wall insulation and new heating systems, to improve energy ratings, EPC, from grade D to C. The project follows the retrofit of five timber-framed Swedish cottages in Bramdene and Cheriton, which have obtained full fabric upgrades and, in some cases, new heating systems, raising their EPC ratings from D to F up to a C. Deputy Leader of the Council and Cabinet Member for Community and Housing, Councillor Paula Ferguson, said, "The energy efficiency of the Council's housing is key to our plans to tackle the climate emergency. We are committed to making our Council housing greener, faster. It's therefore great to see this work getting underway as part of our wider retrofit programme, with the ambitious target to make all council homes carbon neutral by 2030. These works are also good news for the new tenants, as the properties will cost less to heat once the improvements are made. That's a huge benefit, especially given the challenges that many face given the significant rise in the cost of living. The upgrade of the four properties forms part of the council's wider plan to improve energy and cost efficiency of its homes."
This one is entitled "Cafes, Coffee and Cake Makes Hundreds for Charity." A monthly fundraising cafe donated nearly £400 to a blind and partially sighted sports charity. Wanston resident and Winchester Gold Ball representative Pip Varley attended Wanston Community Cafe's September event, alongside visually impaired volunteers Rosie and Scott at Victoria Hall in Sutton Scotney. Rosie plays Gold Ball and helps the coach the intermediate teams, while Scott plays for the intermediate and elite teams, as well as training the novice team. The indoor three-a-side sport is for blind and partially sighted people. Goalball UK provides and promotes sporting opportunities from grassroots to GB squads. The volunteer-led cafe raised £364 for the charity through cake and coffee sales and donations. Boaz is an exclusive farm-based charity in Sutton Scotney, aiming to provide a brighter future for people with learning difficulties. Cafe volunteer Janice Kinnell said, "Adults with learning difficulties can learn new skills such as working on the land, looking after the animals, baking, making craft goods, and woodworking in the workshop in the Boer's Barn at Hill Farm. As well as the usual coffee and cakes offered by the cafe, we'll also be selling eggs, jams, and other goods made at the Boer's Project. Other dates and charities confirmed by Wanston Community Cafe include Wednesday, April the 19th for muscular dystrophy, Wednesday 17th for Wanston Church Pantry, Wednesday June the 21st for Sutton Scotney defibrillator upkeep, The cafe is staffed entirely by volunteers, is cash only.
Mock trials and cell tours. Winchester Crown Court opened its doors to people of all ages for an in-depth look into the judicial system. More than 5,000 people showed up to an open day held on March the 18th. Mock trials took place in real courtrooms, giving the public a chance to see how trials and juries work. Tours of the cells and prison vans took place throughout the day, with the opportunity to sit as a juror. That's appropriate, isn't it?
Yes.
As the public entered, they were given the standard checks anyone going into court would experience, with metal detectors and bag checks. The first floor held a range of stalls, which informed the public on various organisations that are involved in both the court and prison systems. Participants included the Probation Service and IMB HMP Winchester, an independent monitoring board which ensures that prisoners are treated humanely. On the second floor, the public were invited into the courtrooms, where many high-stakes trials had taken place. Attendees were invited to read about previous cases and defendants who had sat in the same rooms and sit in the public galleries. While the galleries are open year-round, the open day shed some light on what it's like to sit in on a trial, as well as the proper court proceedings that must be followed. In one courtroom, barristers explain the different jobs that are required for a trial and the misconceptions some may have about the court.
Planning begins for this year's pantomime. Preparations are already underway for the Christmas family pantomime at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. The theatre in Jury Street has announced that Cinderella will be taking the stage from Thursday, November the 30th to Monday, January the 1st. Cinderella tells the rags-to-riches story of a servant girl whose fairy godmother transforms her into a beautiful princess to go to the ball where she meets a handsome prince. But as the clock strikes midnight, the magic fades, and as Cinderella runs away, she loses her glass slipper, and so begins the prince's search for his princess. The pantomime, produced by arts and education charity Play to the Crowd, boasts corny jokes, original songs, live music and audience participation, with the returning creative team of writer, lyricist and director James Barry and composer Simon Slater. This year's pantomime is supported by Play to the Crowd's corporate partner, regional law firm Paris Smith. Over the coming months, the creative team will hold auditions for the cast and support cast, with rehearsals starting in the winter. There will be accessible performances available, including relaxed, audio-described and British Sign Language interpreted, in addition to a touch tour. Priority booking for Play to the Crowd members is now open. General sale tickets will be live on Friday, March the 24th at 10 a.m. Audiences are encouraged to book early to secure the best price tickets from £10.50, with discounts for members, schools and group bookings.
This one is entitled Vision Emerges for the Heart of New Estate. Firmer plans are emerging for the neighbourhood centre of the new Kings Barton estate. Carla Holmes has been consulting over the heart of the new 2,000 home development being built on the edge of Winchester. The developer intends to build a food store, care home, nursery, pub and a community centre with two open spaces, the park and the yard, in the centre of the scheme. Outline ideas first emerged pre-COVID in 2019, and now Carla has been refining the proposals. The most important change is that car parking will be moved away from the centre to behind the food store. The extra care home will be moved closer to the already open primary school, and the nursery moved next to the community centre. Carla believes that will make the centre more permeable and people-friendly, although the rerouted Andover Road will go through the middle. Viv Hill, Carla Head of Design, told the King Barton Forum that a planning application for proposals will be submitted this year. He said, "We have looked at public car parking and looked to increase the landscaping and relocate the parking to the east and north of the food school to meet concerns about queuing traffic on Andover Road." Mr. Hill said Carla wanted to increase the permeability of the estate, with want to create an east-west routine route of the public realm. This is an opportunity for landscaping and open space that was previously heavily parked. The forum, a city council committee, heard that around 450 of the 2,000 homes have now been occupied. Meanwhile, the King's Barton Forum heard that there is a widespread unhappiness over the plans to divert Andover Road through the estate. Mike Slynn of the King's Barton Residents Association reminded the forum that 3,000 people signed a petition against the diversion. Mr. Slynn said the feeling was strengthened with the plans for buses to use the current Andover Road. He said, "If the road is being kept open for buses, why not for general traffic?" Councillor Kelsey Lerney said the road would close to all traffic, but may at a late date be reopened for buses only. Councillor Caroline Horrill, lead of the Conservative group on the City Council, said the diversion decision was made more than 10 years ago, when the planning approval was given for the estate, then called Barton Farm. The next forum will be on July the 11th.
Pupil protests over cost of college food. A Peter Simmons pupil has started an online petition protesting at the price of hot food at the college. Rowan Pike, 18, told the Chronicle that the cost of warm meals sold by the college has increased since the beginning of last year, citing the price of chicken and chips, which has risen from £3.70 to £4.30, an increase of more than 16%. Rowan said, "I started the petition because I thought it was a bit unfair for those who can't afford it. It's putting me off buying the food. I was looking for different places to buy food. I can't buy a hot meal anymore because it's just not worth the money." He explained that walking into the town centre from the college is also not an option for some students due to how long it takes to walk there from the campus. He also added that he is aware that inflation has played a big part in the price rise, but that he still had questions about why the price for warm food is higher than at other colleges. He said, "At Barton Peveril they charge £4 for chicken and chips with free juice, and they get four different options with a vegan option. If you wanted a drink at Peter Simmons to go with your meal, you have to spend over £5 now." At the time of writing, Rowan's petition had been signed by 463 people. A Peter Simmons spokesperson said, "The college works hard to ensure that the cost of food and drink remains affordable for all students and subsidises the catering activity on campus, so that food is offered to students at prices lower than what it actually costs to produce. Recent cost pressures have meant we've had to increase prices, but we do everything we can to make these increases as minimal as possible. We also offer meal deals, which provide good value for money, of course. Students are always welcome to bring in their own packed lunches and food. Financial support is also available in the form of free college meals for eligible students." Rowan's petition can be found online at change.org/p/stop-raising-food-prices-at-Peter-Simmons.
Latest private hospital win. Sarum Road Hospital in Winchester has been recognised for the cancer services available at its Mulberry Cancer Centre. This is the third time the hospital has received the award. The Macmillan Quality Environmental Mark was set up in 2010 in partnership with Macmillan Cancer Support and the Department of Health to better meet the needs of patients living with cancer. It recognises hospitals, hospices and support centres that go above and beyond in the way they design a cancer service that provides a welcoming and supportive environment. The Marlbury Cancer Centre was first opened in 2015 and is the only dedicated private cancer centre in Winchester. Four categories are evaluated before the award can be given. Sarum Road Hospital's Marlbury Cancer Centre achieved the highest score possible and was recognised as offering an excellent service to patients being treated for a range of cancers. Rebecca Stedman Brown, Oncology Clinical Services Manager, said, "This award is a recognition of the contributions from the whole team, from oncology nurses and pharmacists to our housekeeping staff. The team worked tirelessly through COVID, ensuring that treatments were delivered without interruptions in the face of extraordinary challenges. The oncology team go above and beyond daily to deliver the care that this award recognises."
This one is entitled Gender Pay Gap Figures. Figures reveal that women working for Hampshire County Council earn less than their male colleagues. Employers with 250 or more workers must publish figures on differences in pay between their employees through the government's Gender Pay Gap Service. The figures show that the median hourly salary for women at the Hampshire County Council, abbreviated as HCC, was 16.3% less than for men in the year to March 2022. Of the 307 councils that provided data for 2021-22, the average local authority paid women 3% less than their male colleagues, a small improvement from the 3.3% the year before. Meanwhile, the 88 other councils paid women more than men, including Test Valley Council and Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council. The number of outsourced employees and differences in the services provided by each council is likely to play a role in the variation between them. HCC's statement on gender pay, as published on their website, stated that the council was restricted in how it may present this information, and it is important to note that gender pay gap is not the same as equal pay. Their statement says, "While women's general hourly rate is 16% lower than men, this is not as a result of paying men more than women for the same or equivalent work. County council staff are paid the same for the same job, but the gender pay gap exists due to the council's workforce profile."
Hairdressers to cut homeless residents' hair. A hairdresser is running an event at Winchester Beacon to raise awareness for the organisation. Lorraine Rose, who runs 12 Hair Design in Eastleigh, will lead a group giving haircuts to the people who use the shelter on Sunday, March the 26th. From 12 noon till 4 p.m, Lorraine, along with fellow hairdressers Tracy Shepherd and J.C. Orkamp, will give free haircuts to everyone who the Winchester Beacon currently supports, with previous residents and those supported by other agencies in the city also invited. The one-off event would also see attendees receive free gift bags. Lorraine said, "I volunteer there anyway. Every 6 weeks I go and cut all the residents' hair, whoever wants a haircut in there. We just do the residents at the shelter. But I had a couple of hairdresser friends who went, oh, I'd like to get involved, so I thought it might be quite nice to open it up a bit wider." Michelle Price, Chief Executive of the Winchester Beacon, said, "We're so grateful to Lorraine for many years of support cutting our residents' hair for free. It's powerful to see the positive impact a haircut can have on someone's self-esteem."
Good sports let imagination run wild for charity. A stampede of animals ran through Winchester High Street to raise money for Comic Relief. Winchester friends Kate Hadley and Harriet Riddell called on the city's runners to dress up as animals in support of Red Nose Day. On Saturday, March the 11th, a group of 20 people, led by the duo named The Running Joke, confused crowds as they ran through the city dressed as a stampede of animals. Youngsters ran a 2K route, while some of the adults went on to complete a 10K. Starting from the cathedral grounds, with the event raising nearly £1,000 so far. The run is a follow-on from the pair's half-marathon fundraiser in 2019, where Kate dressed as a shark and Harriet as a unicorn. This time, the friends decided to extend the invitation to get more people involved and raise more money. Harriet, 32, said, "I have a seven-month-old, so I'm just starting to pick up running again. And Kate's recovering from an ankle injury. Training has mostly been about getting moving again. I remember going to friends' houses for a sleepover on Comic Relief night and being allowed to stay up to watch all of us on the living room floor in sleeping bags. It's always felt like a landmark on the calendar. Kate is a good friend with a big heart, and she corrals me into these things. We're over the moon with the amount we've raised. Everybody is finding times are hard, so it's lovely that people are still putting their hands in their pockets. It's funny running through the high street, as people weren't quite sure how to take it, but we had a great laugh and got lots of cheers, in addition to some funny looks. Hopefully we can do it again and continue to spread the word." Participants included kids and parents from Usbury Primary School, as well as head teacher John Flynn, who made a surprise appearance. Chief Executive Comic Relief Samir Patel said, "We're truly humbled by the incredible things our generous supporters do to fundraise for Red Nose Day. It's wonderful to see so many people come together to make a difference and have some fun along the way. We love hearing about what people are up to around the country and wish Harriet and Kate the best of luck with their stampede. The money raised for Red Nose Day will help people going through the toughest times of their lives here in the UK and around the world. So whether you hold a bake sale, get sponsored to do a challenge, buy a Red Nose or T-shirt, or pick up the phone to donate, we are so thankful for everything you do."
This is entitled "Estate Agents Find Themselves a New Home." An established estate agency has relocated its Winchester branch in the High Street. The New Hamptons office at numbers 51 to 52 is the only estate agent's office on the pedestrianised part of Winchester High Street. It was previously on the Upper High Street near Cote Brasserie, where it has been for more than 25 years. The new branch in the shop, previously occupied by Jules, allows Hamptons to be open on Saturdays and comes with a private upstairs meeting room. Branch director Gareth Amwell said, "Whilst we've run a successful business from the old office, this opportunity which presented itself gave us an opportunity to raise our profile because we're the only estate agents on the pedestrianised part of the High Street, and with our windows we're hard to miss. The new location, which opened its doors on Friday, February 24th, has already given the branch a boost to business."
I sing with the Wainfleet Singers, so I'm delighted to be able to bring you this review of our concert that we gave last Saturday. And it's by Derek Beck. Complex programme was well steered by conductor. The first of the rapidly disappearing Saturday music events in Winchester Cathedral was a grand occasion. Sponsored by the Wainfleet Singers, accompanied by the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, half the concert featured choral music associated with coronations, while the rest was a platform for the mighty BSO, which opened with Crown Imperial from 1937 State Occasion. Despite the richness of the professional tutties, the piccolo still managed to dominate the climaxes. In Elgar's nursery suite, dedicated in 1930 to Princesses Elizabeth and Margaret, we could appreciate the delicacy and range of colours from its scoring. Stars among the players were the principal flute and the orchestra's leader with his last movement, Cadenza. A further Elgar offering was his rarely heard Romance for Bassoon with guest soloist Patrick Bolton, a National Prize winner and Peter Simmons College alumnus. he had total command of the lyrical and quasi-improvisatory style required here. If gentle bassoon dynamics were sometimes lost at a distance in the cathedral, so were heavily scored moments in Elgar's opulent coronation ode. The bellicose but characterful Britain, ask of thyself, for bass soloist and men's chorus, became a bit of a competition between voices and instruments, with the latter winning hands down. Soloist Marcus Farnsworth was well equipped for his top G, but was overshadowed by heavy brass and percussion, amplified by the building. Elsewhere, Elgar succeeded mainly in alternating full orchestra and full choir, and the latter's unison rendition of the Land of Hope and Glory melody at the end was guaranteed to bring everything to a triumphant conclusion. Very strong solo contributions were made in this work by soprano Nadine Benjamin, mezzo Nima O'Sullivan, and tenor Ed Lyon. Walton's Coronation Te Deum for 1953 is powerfully ceremonial, and here we could easily distinguish the rich contemporary choral harmonies expertly delivered by the Wanes from the brilliant fanfare-like brass writing. Subsections of the choir added contrast of texture to this fine piece, and there were still sumptuous, soft, often unaccompanied passages to be savoured from the voices in parts of the Coronation Ode and in the earlier 1911 motet, O Hearken Thou. This was a complex programme for conductor Andrew Lumsden to prepare and direct, and he appeared to calmly steer all the musicians through well-chosen tempi and contrasting moods, despite the ever-challenging acoustics of the place he knows so well.
That musical review concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and of course to our readers today, Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And to our guest reader today, Jude Richards.
Goodbye.
And from me, of course, John Richards. Goodbye. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the wallet.